Responses to What is the Cost of a Free Product? By Gary Wunder. In the November 2014 issue of the Braille Monitor, we ran an article entitled, What is the Cost of a Free Product? It was written by Tim Connell, and I dare say that it was sent to me because I had been trying to get major screen reader developers to tell their side of the story by explaining the struggles faced by for-profit companies in an ever-changing market, one which offers far fewer consumers than most businesses hope to find for their products. I thought it important to discuss the case that can be made for for-profit screen reader development that has long been the way those of us who are blind have gotten screen access and many other blindness-related technologies, especially since we have devoted considerable space to low-cost or free screen reading solutions. My hope was that the article we ran would stimulate discussion, and after some gentle prodding from me, this it did. That gentle prodding took the form of a question. If access to technology is so important to us, why hasn't there been more discussion about the models of screen reader development reviewed in Tim Connell's article? Most who commented did not attempt to address the three major funding models currently used for screen reader development and reviewed by Connell. Instead, they responded to what they saw as an attack on NVDA, the non-visual desktop access program developed and maintained by NV Access. While the Braille Monitor cannot hope to print each of the responses generated, there are two that are particularly thought-provoking and add significantly to the discussion of how we will continue to have access to information that appears on the screens of computers, tablets, and telephones. Here, with slight editing, our responses are taken from the National Federation of the Blind and Computer Science mailing list. The first is from Aaron Cannon, who apologizes for not being articulate and then proceeds to acquit himself very well in putting forward his point of view. A photo appears at this point, the caption, Aaron Cannon. I think the reason we haven't seen more arguments with Tim's article is that, frankly, his main points are hard to track. I can't complain too much, though, since I suspect that he writes much more clearly than I do. But let me let Tim speak for himself. The work that developers of NVDA have done is exceptional. On a small budget, they have developed a really good product and have provided a free screen reader to many thousands of people around the world who couldn't previously afford one, especially in developing countries. Their technical skills and dedication are to be applauded. However, I have a problem with the funding model they have chosen. Philanthropic funding is at best a fragile beast, and it often doesn't extend to covering services like training and support, which can be the most important components of accessibility, especially in education. The bigger issue of equity and why we accept such a fundamental right as access to a computer to be at the whim of philanthropic generosity should be of tremendous concern. Do we welcome it simply because the recipients are people with a disability? Why is this particular group of people not worthy of a business model that guarantees standards of support, service, and viability? The developers of NVDA need investors, not handouts. Perhaps my brain just isn't working right this morning, but I am having a hard time following his objections to NVDA. If I understand it right, he is saying that the funding model for NVDA is fragile, so we shouldn't trust it. He also seems to be arguing that it's based on charity, and so beneath us, and besides, it doesn't allow for user support and training. If my reading is correct, I remain unconvinced. NVDA support is available from various organizations for a fee. JAWS users, on the other hand, end up also paying for support, but they do so up front, whether they need it or not. Training is also available for a fee, but that's certainly not unique to NVDA. JAWS does come with some training materials, but similar materials are also available for free for NVDA. I agree that NVDA funding is more fragile than we should like, but much of what we who are blind rely on is philanthropic in nature. And if one source of funding dries up, another one is found. Anyway, I don't see traditional sources of investment funding being substantially more reliable than philanthropic ones. Investors, donors come, investors, donors go, and organizations either find new ones, figure out a way to do without, or fail. So far, NV Access seems to have been able to find new donors when needed. Consider what would happen if FS, bracket Freedom Scientific, the developer of JAWS, close bracket, and NV Access both went under, and all the developers moved on to bigger and better things, or at least things that would provide them with a paycheck. JAWS would be gone. Your already installed copies would probably work, but there would be no way to install the full version on new machines. NVDA, on the other hand, would still be available. Not only would it still be available to install, but it would be available to improve, fix, and whatever else someone wanted to do with it, within the bounds of the GPL, bracket General Public License, close bracket. It's even possible that a new group of developers would come along and keep the project going. In short, JAWS belongs to FS, NVDA belongs, in a very literal sense, to everyone. I'd much rather see money invested into something I own than into something I don't. That's all for now. Aaron Cannon. A photo appears at this point, the caption, Steve Jacobson. So there you have a thoughtful and articulate response to one of the concerns in Connell's article. This was followed by several posts, the one which follows being by Steve Jacobson. He currently serves as the vice president of the NFB in computer science and holds the same office in the affiliate of the NFB of Minnesota. He has been employed by the 3M company as a programmer for many years and is currently a lead data quality analyst. Here is what he says. This article and the issues it raises are very important in my opinion. I think we have a somewhat false sense of security regarding our ability to use computers and access software in many ways. First, I did not interpret anything Tim said in his article as minimizing the efforts of those working on NVDA. I certainly keep a copy on my computer as a means to help me out when my main screen reader hangs up, and NVDA has a lot of power. My interpretation of his point was more like this. How would it go over if sighted people on the job had to depend upon volunteers to build and support their computer monitors? That just wouldn't be accepted. Our screen readers are our computer monitors, and I think he was asking why we should expect anything less for something that is so important. Those of you who are working for someone else are likely very aware of how terribly fragile our accessibility is. If you are in full control over the software you use, the picture is a good bit better because you can control what you use and could, for example, pick software that works with NVDA. Where I work, I regularly use two programs that work fairly well with JFW, JAWS for Windows, and WindowEyes, and do not work with NVDA. I am not blaming NVDA since these are both older pieces of software, but both JAWS and WindowEyes are a little more robust and offer some ability for a user to stretch their functionality more easily than is the case with NVDA. Since efficient access means money in my pocket, paying the price for a commercial screen reader is worth it to me. However, that doesn't mean I would not donate to NVDA, and NVDA has often been better at implementing modern approaches to accessibility. That is a valuable contribution that cannot be overstated. The Wikipedia model for funding was mentioned in another note, and while I use that resource some, I don't see that as an effective approach to screen reader development that needs to exist in employment settings where there is security involved. A screen reader is not a collection of information that you can cross-check for accuracy. It is closer to a computer monitor that bridges software to hardware. I am not arguing that there are not other funding models to support NVDA that we could consider. Discussing alternatives is the point to all of this after all. The commercial screen reader model isn't perfect either. As I see it, screen readers, including NVDA, are so busy trying to keep up with new versions of Windows and Microsoft Office that they don't have a lot of resources to try to innovate. Software and web pages have changed dramatically over the past 10 years, but how information is presented to the blind has not changed all that much. Even the efforts of screen readers to take advantage of ARIA, Accessible Rich Internet Applications, a tool used to tell screen readers how information should be presented when its presentation is visually obvious but is ambiguous to screen reading software, seems to be painful. Large companies like Google and Microsoft make sweeping changes to their software, provide very basic accessibility by exposing the information in their changes, and then leave it to the screen reader developers to make it all work for you and me. The time and money that they have to spend just to keep up is not insignificant, and a lot of the money that we pay for upgrades goes to just staying even with what particularly the large companies change. I have personally witnessed the time it can take to figure out why something doesn't work right, and it can be extreme. We expect our screen readers to know when a menu pops up and to track menu selections as they have been doing for 20 years. If finances were unlimited, a dream I know, shouldn't there be a way to automatically tell us what is important on a web page in a similar manner? There are tools we can use, but thinking about what is really important on a web page isn't something screen readers really have time to research, and they have concentrated on what they can get from HTML. But one has to wonder, could useful analysis of appearance help us? How about a command to jump to the text with the largest fonts, or analyze text color, for example? What about the third model discussed in Connell's article, building a screen reader into the operating system? From a technical point of view, this is probably the most sound approach. However, I have the same reservations that were expressed in the article. I know that there have been bugs with accessibility both in Microsoft Office and Windows for a few years that are known to Microsoft. Microsoft sends us updates all the time to their software and operating system. How often do you run Windows or Office Update? But some accessibility bugs have to wait for the next major release, whatever that means. We have also seen Microsoft leave out or complicate keystroke access to Office 2013 that can only have happened because making keystrokes work well isn't a real priority. This is within their own software, so they have control. While keyboard access is something some sighted people still use, it still gets what appears to be casual consideration at best. How can I feel confident that they would maintain a screen reader over time, and what priority would they give bugs that might be present in handling competing products? What priority would a Microsoft screen reader give to OpenOffice support, for example? Similar concerns could be asked about Apple, although the environment is somewhat different. The point is that there are some real drawbacks to all of the current models. Add to the fact that the software and web development are extremely dynamic right now and probably will be for some time to come. Now look at our market size, which is relatively small. Also look at the laws that require accessibility, which apply mostly to state governments and to the federal government. These laws have limited applicability in the private sector, and even in those areas they clearly cover, access is too often substandard or not available at all. It isn't that efforts are not being made, but the number of web pages is huge, and the pressure to continually evolve is great. As consumers, we really need to think about all of this as we move forward. It is one thing to evaluate all of this in terms of our leisure activities. Inefficient access can be frustrating, but it is mostly manageable because we have some control over our environment. But in particular, how do we deal with websites and software used within parts of the private sector, where even ADA may not apply completely, and where undue burden may accurately describe the changes that would need to be made in some cases? These are real challenges that go beyond insulting one's favorite screen reader or web browser, and this is what we really need to try to address. When I attended the first Microsoft Accessibility Summit in 1995, and when I participated in discussions of the accessibility of Java in 1998, I never dreamed we would still be fighting for accessibility as we must in 2014. There needs to be serious thought as to how we can do better in the future, and we need to discuss it thoroughly and reasonably. Best regards, Steve Jacobson.